This week's Tow Away has been sponsored by family Dee Blathman, Liv Foden and Swim Shell, Abby Blathman and Tippy Friedman. Zion Elul, Tuesday the 6th of September, Rabbi Yehoshua Posen, Chinuch.
Good morning. Shavs Yudelevich, who was a famous Magidim which is saw a number of years ago, he's lived about 10 years ago, I think. He says over a Maisa, he says over a story where it doesn't say exactly how long ago it happened, but I'm guessing at least 100 years ago. There was a time when the Anias in Yerushalayim was acute, and Rabbonim and Gedolim in Eretz Yisrael got together and decided that they need to come up with some funds in order to pay for basic food for people to eat and drink. And therefore they got together and they appointed a Talmud Chacham, and they were sending him as their Shliach to Chutz La'aretz to try and raise some funds for Aniyei Yerushalayim. And they put this person on a boat and they sent him on the way. He'd never been out of Eretz Yisrael, sent him to Italy. No, didn't speak any Italian, had no addresses or anything to go to there, and he arrived there Erev Shabbos, as all these stories always seem to do. And he's there by the dock with his case, and he's got no idea where to go, who to turn to. And just then, a very plush carriage goes past, driven by four horses, and a driver sitting on top in his fine clothes. And just after it goes past him, it stops, and the curtain opens, and someone shouts out something to him in Italian. Doesn't speak a word of Italian, doesn't even know for sure they're speaking to him. And then the person says in broken Hebrew, "Do you have anywhere to go for Shabbos?" Obviously he, you know, looked apart, and "Do you have anywhere to go for Shabbos?" So he says, "No." She says, "Fine, hop in the carriage." So he goes in the carriage and he goes on the way. And we've only got half an hour, so I can't tell you the pages and pages that Shabbos spends on how the gates and the winding path and the splendor and the palace that this Oisha lived in. But suffice to say, it wasn't what the Rav was used to seeing in Yerushalayim. And he comes into this mansion. It's bedecked with gold and silver and ornaments and drapes and pictures. And he's walking through it, and then he sees that there's like a central point. It's a little bit open plan, and all the staircases come down, and they lead to the hall where all the different pathways seem to lead to. And there, in the hall, there's a little pillar, base, and on that base is a broken jug. It's dirty, it's muddy, it's old, it's sitting there in like a glass case. And it looks completely out of place with amongst all the finery and the gold and silver around. It's very strange, but he doesn't ask any questions and he carries on. They go to shul Friday night, they come home, they're eating the meal, but the way that the dining room is made is also that from the dining room he can still see this jug in the hall. Every now and then he's looking and trying to work out if he's missing something. Maybe, you know, maybe this is modern art. You know, now they stuck at Belief. What is the vault of this jug? And the host sees that that's what he's doing. And he says to him eventually, after a few times looking, he says, "I noticed that you're a bit taken up with this jug." He says, "Yes." He says, "It doesn't really seem to fit into your magnificent home." He says, "No, you're right. That jug has a very special story." He says, "No, you whet my appetite." He says, "That jug, because of that jug, I became frum." He says, "What happened? What's the story with the jug?" So he says, "I'll tell you a story. I used to be a boy in Amsterdam. I grew up in Holland, and my father, unfortunately, didn't have any panosa. But I had a zeda. Had a zeda lived in Italy, and he had a shop, a small shop, and he was already getting a bit old. So my father decided he's sending me off to from Holland to Italy to help my Zeta take over the shop and hopefully that way I'll have a panosa." So I schlepped across Europe, I went to Italy, and I came to my Zeta shop and I saw that nothing had been changed in the last 40 years, it was exactly the same. So I shut it down for a few weeks, refurbishment, I painted the whole shop, I threw out half the stuff that had been on shelves for decades already, I brought in all new Zeta, exactly what the Olam wanted, and sure enough, Baruch Hashem, within a few weeks, business started booming. To such an extent that after half a year, we already opened our second shop. And within a few years, we had branches all over Italy. And millionaires, mamish, very, very wealthy. But the entire time, my Zeda made sure that we kept mamish to the halacha, chut hasara, we didn't miss tefillah, but sibul, we mamish, didactic on everything. But yeah, unfortunately, the time came and my Zeda was nifta. And after he was lifter, at that time, I expanded, opened my first shop outside Italy. And it got to a stage where, you know, it was a shaila of missing a meeting because of mincha b'tzivos, so you had a mincha, you know, some other time. And then it got to a stage where you just didn't have mincha at all. And then, unfortunately, shachris followed suit. And within a couple of years, he stopped keeping Yiddishkeit completely. He says, one day, I was going along the way. Normally, I didn't walk anywhere. I got driven by carriage. But I was going along the way, and I decided I need a bit of fresh air. I'm going to walk from my last appointment to my house. It wasn't so far. And I'm walking through the streets, and I see a little Yiddish boy with payas. He's sitting on the side of the corner of the road, and he's crying uncontrollably. Mum is sobbing. And I stop, and I say, I go over to him, and I say to him, what's the matter? And I can't, until I can control him, it takes a few minutes. He's sobbing and sobbing and sobbing. And I say to him, what's the problem? Tell me, what's the issue here? And he says to me that my parents don't have any money. They don't have any money. Bekoshi, my father, is able to buy a bit of bread and a bit of water for us to eat and drink at home. Sometimes he goes without. They haven't got him. But you should know, in our religion, this time of year, since the boy didn't even realize that this person was a Yid, so this time of year is our festival of lights. Chanukah, it starts tonight, Chanukah. And then we light oil every night, we light oil, and it's a very, very special festival. We look forward to it already weeks in advance. My father, as I said before, doesn't have any money. So already, for weeks before, any spare penny that he might have, he puts into a special box. It's the Chanukah box. And he saves up, and then when he's got 10 liras, that's enough to buy a jug of oil. So he, you know, eventually saved up. So this morning, you know, tonight's the first night of Chanukah. This morning, he came to me and he said, after Chedzi, he said, Yasser, you know, he didn't have time to go and buy it. He's busy working in with Lila. He said, Yasser, here's the box. Yasser, you're careful with this box. You take this box straight to the shop. You don't go anywhere else. And then when you get your jug of oil, you bring it straight back here. You guard that oil with your life. So he said, that's what I did. I went straight to the shop and I bought the oil. And I was, the whole time, I knew exactly how excited my father was going to be when I got home with this oil. And I carried this jug home, and I didn't look anywhere else. I just looked at this oil the whole time. But the problem was, I didn't see there was something sticking up from the pavement. And I tripped, and I broke the jug. He said, this happened already an hour ago. I don't know what to do. He said, I can't go home. I don't know what to tell my father. There's no way you can replace it. You can't have the money. We're going to go the whole of Chanukah without oil. What are we going to do? So, at that stage, said this Yid, he said, I had a reality check. And I thought to myself, look at this, here you have a man, Pasha can't put bread on the table, and yet he's saving every spare penny in order to do a mitzvah, in order to buy a menorah. And you see how his children, that message is filtered through to the children, that the children know how upset it's going to be. And, you know, he doesn't say, I'm worried I'm going to get home, I'm going to get a clip around the ear, maybe that as well. But he's worried that his father's not going to be able to do the mitzvah of menorah, and he knows how upset that will make him. He says, and here on the other hand, me, I can light menorahs in every one of my shops around Europe, and I won't even notice the difference of the cost, and yet I'm not doing it for no reason at all. No reason. Pasha, just, I've let everything lie as it is. And he was mekabel upon himself then and there that he was going to start looking into being chayz of a tshuva. He carries on his, so he took out 100 lira note from his wallet, and he gave it to this young boy, 100 lira, he'd never seen this note. He said, go back to the shop, buy another jug, and the change give to your father. Thank you. As the boy is walking away, he sees this jug is left on the floor. So he says, you know what? I'm going to have that jug. I want that jug. He picked up that jug. He said, that jug I'm taking home. That jug is going to remind me of this Kabbalah which I've had. Fine. On the way home, he passes a shul which he always used to daven in until, unfortunately, he stopped going to shul. And he sees there's a big circle, there's a big sign outside that shul. And on the circle it says, and there's a special Rav come from Eretz Yisrael to speak to the killer. The killer is invited to come to a shir, which happened tonight. So he thinks to himself, you know, this must be Bashir. So I said, remember, I haven't had the shir in decades. I haven't been in the shul in decades. I never noticed what's on this sign. Punk, now I'm a kabbalah myself, and then I see a sign. I've got to go to the shir. So, kachaba, that night he goes to the shir. He's sitting there at the shir. And this Rav gets up, and his parshas Vayigash, right there, of Chanukah. He gets up and he speaks about the story of Yosef and the brothers and how Yosef enticed the brothers to bring Binyamin down to Mitzrayim. And Binyamin came to Mitzrayim and then he sent them back and he put the Becher in the bag of Binyamin. We all know the story. And it gets to the stage at the beginning of Vayigash where Yosef tells the brothers, listen here, you can all go back home, I've got no time on you, but Binyamin has to stay here. And at that stage, Parshas Vayigash opens with Yehuda losing his cool. And Yehuda says that Vayigash, no, Yehuda, and he says, it can't be such a thing, there's no way. He says, Yehuda, how can I go back home to daddy, and I won't have the boy with me, how can I go back without the boy? That's what Binyamin shies at Yosef. So that's what Yehuda shies at Yosef. Turns the Magid to the Olim, and he says, Abbasa, each and every one of us is given a neshama. Chenek and Akav, Ma, we're all given a neshama to Hayur, a neshama and a kittel. And this neshama has no interest whatsoever in coming down into this world. He has nothing to gain from this world. He probably is only going to lose. He's going to have to see things he doesn't want to see and hear things he doesn't want to hear. And everything else that goes with it, he's in a much better place up in Shemayim. But he's not given a prayer. He's told you have to come down, and each neshama has a place where it goes, an address, and the neshama comes into us. Of Azob the Magid there, he said, how are we going to go back to Avinu Shemayim v'hamna einenu itzi? This na, this innocent, tired, pure neshama which we were given, look what we've done to it. Look what we've made of it. And says the Aisha said at that stage, he said, I broke down crying more than the boy. He said, I sobbed, and that mamish made me, I was chayz v'tshuva, and because of that, that's where I am today, Baruch Hashem, everything the way it should be. And that jug of oil has pride and place in my house. I dafka have my house built in such a way you can see it from wherever you are, in order that I don't forget the lesson of that jug of oil. So Be'etzem, we're holding here in Elul, the lesson of the Magid speaks for itself. But I'd like to add a little twist of my own, if I may, to this lesson of the Magid. I've got a kasha, which I probably have more than some of you, and that's because I get to see more than some of you. And that is, how can it be that sometimes you have a situation where parents are makbid on being honest and elach and act the way that one should when it comes to mongolistic zachen, and yet somehow it doesn't seem to filter through to the next generation? Not always, I've had them. But sometimes there are times when the younger generation, I'm not saying this that I'm 65, right, the younger generation, but sometimes the next door, let's call it that way, the next door doesn't seem to have the sensitivity to being elah in the same way as the previous door have. And my kasha is postured that the Maisa Shkait and Gemara, that the first kasha which a person gets asked in Yom HaDin, is Nasatam Satav Emunah. So my kasha is, I'm a play on the words of the Magid, is how can we go back to Avinu Shebashamayim? We as parents have a duty to mechanach our children, our grandchildren. How can we go there and answer that first question? Our Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to turn and say, okay, you were, but what happened to the next days? What went wrong? Now, Meister, there's a very interesting medrash. It's in Tanis Daf Tes. In Tanis Daf Tes, Tosis, Tosis brings a medrash. A story where there was a very, very wealthy man. And this wealthy man was blessed with a field which wielded every single year a yield of 1,000 kor. 1,000 kor is a tremendous amount of produce. And every year he took 100 kor, which is itself a sizable amount, and gave that to Maisa. Religiously, every single year he gave 100 kor to Maisa. It came to his last days, and his toast was on his death, but he called in his son. And he says to his son, you're going to Yarsh in this field, and you should know this field, Mamish, my Ashuras comes from this field. Every year it yields 1,000 kor, and every year I give 100 kor to my son. I want you to take this field, and I want you to be Mamshich my Hanhoga of Meister, that every year when you get 1,000 kor, you should give 100 kor to my son. Even though 100 kor is a tremendous amount, that's what you have to do. And the son said, fine. And the father was Nifta. And the first year the field had a yield of 1,000 kor, and the son took 100 kor, and he gave it to Meister. But the next year already he decided that, you know, 100 kor to Meister, how much does Meister need already? 100 kor? Can't do it. No, he can't bring himself to give that much to Meister. So he didn't. And the year after, the yield of the field dropped to 100 kor. Interesting, straight in the Medrash, that the Mishpacha, his Mishpacha, put on Big Day Levenim, and they came to the field, and they were laughing. And he said, what's the matter? What's going on here? You're laughing at my expense. I've lost 90% of my wealth. You're laughing at me? How can it be one? What's going on? So they said, it's your fault. You had very, very clear instructions on how to make this field productive. And you blew it. And until now, you were the balabos, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the kohen, and you had to give him 10%. Because you didn't, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you know what, fine, let's change roles. I'll become the balabos, you become the kohen, I'll give you 10%. That's the end of the story. So I was in Bournemouth in the summer, and Shlomo Freshwater said over this thesis, and he asked the posh lekasha. He said, Hayitzachim, you have a person who's whole and hogas achayim, he's been so makpid to give maisa, even though this maisa is mamish a fortune of money. Right? None of us know if we'd be in that position, if we'd be able to be owned on the Yitzhahara, to tzaka not give it. But every single year the father gave this maisa. And on his deathbed, Nachtatzi, he calls in the son and he hands over the Messiah to the next generation, make sure you give this maisa. And the son says, fine. And he sees that for the first year, Yitzhaka wields 1,000 kor. And yet, a year later, 1 year, Tzacha Kol, it lasted for 1 year. A year later, what happens? No, he can't do it. He can't do it. How come? How can such a thing be? So Shlomo said the Gevaldige Torah, it's a posh the Torah. He says, where was the son all these years when the father's giving Maisa? Did the son see the father give Maisa? The son didn't see anything. The father's giving Maisa Shkila. Hey, he's not putting plaques up, he's not sponsoring dinners, he's just very, very quiet, and he's giving his Maisa. So the son doesn't get to know anything about the father's Maisa. You're right, it could mamish be one of the aleph base of the yesodus of the father's Yiddishkeit, but the son doesn't see it. The son doesn't live it. If the son doesn't live it and he doesn't see it, you can't turn around Achamem Esim on the last few hours and try and give over on Hogas Achaim and then have times when the son isn't mamshachit. It doesn't go like that. It doesn't work like that. Be'etzim, when it comes to Erlichkeit and Momenus, because of the Metzius of where it happens and how it happens, most times the children don't get to hear about it. He said that actually, something from Sherman Roberts, that there was a person who lives in the middle of nowhere and he never had Mishlochim come. Once a year, a Kitsa Yeshiva used to come collect him. And he says that the father used to go upstairs and wake up his children to bring them down, that they should see the father give tzedakah, because that was the only time he gave God to give tzedakah. He wanted to help him to give tzedakah. So they used to bring them downstairs to see him give tzedakah. But Be'etzem, most of the Anhogas Achayim that we have, the whole Anhogah of Bitochen and Emunah in the workplace, how do the children get to know about it if you don't tell them? If you're sitting around the Shabbos meal and you don't tell them about that tremendous Siyata D'Shmaya that you had in the office, or you don't tell them about that Nisoyim which you had, Be'etzem, to do something which would have been Neged Halacha and how you were Oymed on it, if you don't pass it down, unfortunately, to today's generation Befrat, the relationship between parents and children, the amount that they speak, the little that they don't, you know, the little you speak, and with the phones and everything else going on, there's such a period, you know, so you spend a few hours together, sachakol around the Shabbos table, use those hours, use the time you have to give over the Masuria property of what's choshev to you. Sometimes our parents, the things are so choshev, and the children don't even have a clue. They have no idea. We have two particular lessons in this week's parasha on this Hanhoga. The first is rivers. The Kleyoka, it's a famous Kleyoka. The Kleyoka says, what's Pshat in Hilchos Rivers? Now I, as you know, given here and other places, many Shulim in Hilchos Rivers, so I get to encounter the different people's approach to Rivers and issues of Rivers, and a number of times I've encountered this question, that the Maisa nowadays, does it really make sense to us Rivers? The whole economy works like that, and that's the financial sector, and how it works, so with all that goes with it. The Kleyoka says, Azim. Yes, the Kashi says, why is it right? If I malve £100,000 to Reuven, and he needs it for an investment, he makes an investment, he makes money on it, he's happy to give all that profit to me. Why should he be allowed to make money off my money, and I'm not allowed to get any hano? He's happy to pay me, I'm happy to take it, he's happy, it's a win-win situation. What the halal is the problem here? Says the Kleyoka, you know what? If you, Taka, want to make money on this, and you think this investment is a good investment, we have an option. It's called Shutfus. Invest with him. Why are you taking him up on that option? You know why? Because you're worried. You know what? Maybe it'll be a loss. Maybe things won't work out. I don't want to be in a position where I might not only not get a profit, I might lose my revach as well. So you know what? I want to be guaranteed. So basically, effectively, what you're saying is, I want to take Bitochen out of my business affairs. I don't have to rely on a Kodesh Baruch Hu for my panosah. I want to know, guaranteed, on the button I'm going to get it. Now you can ask a kasha, if that's the problem, why is one allowed to be malva rivers to a goy? He has a teretz. Not for now, he has a teretz. But upon him, that's the vod. He says that, nicely, Shtein Gemara, saponim ruvim chasidim. When it comes to sailors, they're chasidim. Why are they chasidim? because, I mean, the modern day equivalent of this phrase is probably there's no such thing as an atheist in a foxhole. You know, Saponim are on the sea every hour of the day. They know that their life is in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hands. The sea is turning. There's a storm. Anything can go wrong. So, Mamela, they have to believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Otherwise, how are they going to survive? They see the Yad Hashem the whole time. Anyone who deals nowadays in stocks or shares or properties or whatever else it is knows full well how everything, Mamish is in control. One day everything can look amazing, the next day everything can change, and the next day it can change back. Hakol B'dei Shemayim. So that means a person is living B'tochen every single day. But Ribis means I want to take HaKadosh Baruch Hu out of the equation. Chochma Sodom Tzaka says that the reason why a Malvav Ribis loses his panosa. Why is Malvav Ribis loses panosa? So he says, you know why? Because Ba'etzem, and Malvav Ribis is saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has told me I'm going to make a panosa by acting so and so. But I think that's not enough. I need to have certain guarantees in place. I need to have certain assurances. I need to know that I'm going to get, I have to be Malvav Ribis. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, fine, you know, no problem. You don't want me to run your panosa. You want to run it yourself. Hey, here's the key of the Mafteach and Panosa. See how well you do on your own. And of course, on your own, it doesn't go. So that's why the Gemara says,
so how
is
to put it all back in place?
Hetisk is an investment. Tzaka is not guaranteed. It's not guaranteed. Tzaka, there being matzah and hetisk where one doesn't get the money. Another matzah in this week's parasha. I'll just explain very, very, just before that, very briefly, we haven't got time to do it properly, but the Benish Chai asks, why is it that Malvav Ribis doesn't come back with Chiyas HaMiz? Malvav Ribis doesn't have Chiyas HaMiz. So he says, a whole cheshbon, but basically he brings another medrash that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Satan, has tainus and kalisot, we don't keep the Torah mitzvahs properly, so the others come, I think it's Yitzchok if I remember correctly, and Yitzchok makes a cheshbon, he says, how many years do we live? A person lives 70 years. So 70 years, half that time we spend sleeping. So in sleeping we're not doing any avirus. So it's 35 years gone already, right, before we start. So 35 years. Of the 35 years, half the time we spend learning, davening, and eating, and whatever. We're also not doing avirus. So it boils down to mamish, how many years sacha kol we doing avirus? It's not such a big deal. HaKadosh Baruch Hu shel rachmonos on us. Says the Ben Ishchai, that's the midrash. Says the Ben Ishchai, a Malvav Ribis, while he's sleeping, while he's eating, while he's davening, while he's learning, the Ribis is going up and up and up the whole time. So he's been over and over every single second. He loses the whole potent. Yitzhak's defense crumbles. The whole defense, how much of our day are we actually spending our various, not by him. By him, he's racking up our various. You can hear that. You can hear the clicking the whole time. So really, that's that. He doesn't get to some listen. It's not Zeichel. He doesn't have the skuspid to come back that we normally have. Hakaponim is another very interesting zach in this week's parasha. There are many interesting in this week's parasha, but another on the same theme in this week's parasha is right at the end before Maftit. There's an issa which we find in other places in the Torah as well. An issa to have weights. There's a lav to have weights which are inaccurate. Even to have them, even if you're not going to use them, to have in your house weights which are inaccurate, you're over on a lav. And the pasuk says something very interesting. Just before Maftit, the pasuk says, the Torah is a stuff of something that's a good riddle you want to try out. This is not so well known, you know, so the end of Kisei, so you've got a lot of Chumash Rashi to get through before that. But the Meisah Shteyden posuk, that a person who makes sure that his weights are okay, gets Arichas Yomim. There are three other places in the Torah where Arichas Yomim is promised. One is Kibbutz Avim. One is Shluach HaKam, also this week's Pasha. One is Talmud Torah, and here. But this is the only love. There's no other love in the Torah where Arichas Yomim is promised if you're not over on the love. Now, if you look in Chinuch, from the Pasuk, you might say it looks like an Aseh, because he's saying you should keep good weights. It's not brought here as an Aseh. It's rather brought Legabe scales. There's a mitzvah Aseh to have your scales. But this halacha of making sure you don't have in your house weights which are uneven or incorrect. It doesn't. There's no Aseh. This is the only love. So Chaim Tzachik brings why here is that? Why here? I'm Yichus Yom given by this love punt out of all the love in the Torah. She says, but that's a similar point we've been saying the whole time. This anhoga of being 100% glatt emes and not giving into the temptations. You know, I'll add a little bit of the scales. Times a bit rough. We need a bit more. Mashu. Well, I've done something to this girl. It doesn't have to be so exact. It doesn't matter. Other people do it as well. But all the tzurutzim that go with it, only if a person's mamish malmin b'munah shleima, got stunning betochen, he knows that Kodesh Baruch Hu will decide what I need to get and how I need to get. And this option which comes now, if it's negative halacha, so I won't go down that route and I'll still get the money. And adrab, if I do go down that route, I'll lose the money somewhere else. Only then is it tzaka shayach to be so much, but now that we don't actually deal with scale, with weights so much, most of us, right? Tzaka, I remember now, so the fruit seller where we lived, Tzaka used to turn on the electric scales. I said, no, don't put it on yet, wait, it has to go to zero. I told him, you should have kavanah, making sure your scales are glass. Because he's a lucky man, every day he's working in the food shop, and he's racking up the schusim for Tzaka, making sure that his weights and scales are kedasa kedim. Some of those who work in jewelry and gold and silver, you have the same thing. But the meister, this unhogger of making sure that everything is kedasa kedin, that's what gives you Eretz Yomim. Because the Kishvok says, look, this is a person who's making sure that every minute of his life he's acting the way I want it to be. So per se, that's taka unhogger that I want to be mamshik. The taka Rashi and Pasuk in Tehillim Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Gimel, says, Betach Vashem Asi Tei Shochin Eretz V'roi Muno. If you trust in Hashem, you do good, then you'll dwell in the land and you shouldn't shed your faith. So Rashi says, Ve'al toima, listen to Rashi. Al toima, im loy egzel ve'egnoi ve'etzin le'on yitztoker, v'amei tzvanus. Don't say, if I don't steal, I have to give tzvanus, how am I going to get a panos? How can I make a panos like that? You know, if you're so restricted, not only are you not allowed to steal, and you have to be eilef, but also then you have to give tzvanus, how am I going to make a panos? Says Rashi, so here Rashi Taka brings in the Arichas Yomim. Through a person giving stock and through a person having a munah betochen, that's the best recipe for Arichas Yomim, is the best recipe for good panosim. I'll go upon him to conclude. But as in this hanhaga, which most of us have, Baruch Hashem, of being glatz and being erlich, but we mustn't forget that where do the dor see it? Where do the children see it? They're not in the office. They don't get to see it. So you can have a matzah where a person, this is such a tenant of faith, when they're so muppet, and yet the next dor completely lose track. They're not mamshich the anhoga bechlal. Like we said in the Medrash of Tosis, it doesn't happen by the next dor. Why? Because if that's our fault. That's a time on us. If this such a thing is so important to us, we have to find, to think of the best way to give over, but we have to think of a mahalach whereby we can give over this hanhoga, this mitzvah, these things which are so important to us, to the next door, in order that they can then be mamshu.